Hello everybody and welcome back to the AntPod. This is now episode 23 and today we are talking breeder slash feeder animals. And why are we doing that? Well, there's quite a lot of different feeder animals. There's cockroaches, there's mealworms, there's fruit flies, and today we're going to just talk about the pros and cons of the different, well, animals and what we personally use. And as I'm just going to go with the ball and say I'm personally using roaches. Through my time, I have tried flightless fruit flies, or flightless flies, fruit flies, crickets, grasshoppers, roaches, and mealworms and superworms. So I think I have an opinion on quite a lot today. But what about you, Casey? What feeders have you used and what are you using?
I am currently trying to grow 5 or 6 dubia roaches right now to start my own, you know, self-sustaining roaches. And then I do have a flightless fruit fly starter kit, I guess, from Petco. If you guys have those out here, we have a Petco, but yeah, it's just a little like a Tupperware container full of fruit flies. And those have both been going pretty good for me. My roaches aren't big enough to eat or mate yet, so I'm still waiting.
Yeah, it takes some time. I've tried a lot of different roach farms, which we're going to talk about soon. But I think I finally hit something that actually works. I was very rude and just said Casey's talk. Today we are sitting with Antimatters, Lynn, also known as Nino Tudo, and Casey, also Antimatters, is known as Jake now, with that we are on first names. I would just like to say officially, I think Ryan have left the podcast. This was supposed to be his last episode as far as I could figure out. So Ryan will be out and Lynn and Antimatters, Lynn and Jake, we'll be here a lot more. So yeah, hello to you two again. And yeah, Lynn, what kind of breeders, feeders do you use?
Ooh, well, for breeders, I have a lot of different kind of roaches. And for feeders, I've used grasshoppers, maggots, mice, baby mice, the roaches, of course, crickets, flies, fruit flies. What more? I keep forgetting everything, but I've used a lot of different things.
Yeah, there's quite a few things nowadays, and that's also why we're doing this episode, to kind of sum up at least most of them. What about you, Jake? What kind of feeders slash is there a difference between feeders and breeders? Anyone who knows that?
Well, personally, I've got Morio worms, mealworms, cockroaches, and flies, the little flightless fruit flies. Although, yeah, the breeders, I guess, if you're going to classify things as breeders, the cockroaches, they're breeders, because I'm trying to like actually breed them. Although the Morio worms and stuff, I just buy them, and when they run out, I buy some more, like, so it's not really breeding.
So why do you then have so many different feeder insects? Why not just one?
Well, I think the smaller colonies, I like to give them flies sort of thing. The medium colonies, they get a mealworm, and like a big colony, they'll have like Morio worms or big roaches normally. And then the roaches as well, the Harpignathos venator, they really like the little roaches, so they get some of those.
Yeah, I think there's really a lot of different ways to go about it. I don't know, I haven't really planned out if there's a certain way we should take this episode. But I think we should just take it from one end and slowly talk about all the different breeders you can use. And I think for me, cockroaches slash roaches is something that is brilliant to do if you have quite a lot of colonies. There's a lot of people who are scared of using roaches just because it's a cockroach and generally they don't have a good reputation. So what I recommend to newbies is often mealworms. And I think we should just talk a little bit about how to have a mealworm farm, because I feel like it's the most to-go solution. Mealworms and fruit flies is like the basic way to go. Casey, have you used any of them?
I have fed
fruit flies.
Yeah, but I also have fed mealworms. I buy them for fishing.
but and I just had some left over. So I do chop them up and throw them in there, and usually they end up just an empty husk, which is usually a good sign.
Yeah, that's the nice thing. I mean, that's also something we can talk about, is the different things about an exoskeleton and not. Because fruit flies, they don't really leave any leftovers as far as I'm aware, at least as far as I remember. But how did you keep your mealworms? Did you have a farm where you tried to breed them, or was it just the box you got them in?
I just kept, because I bought them for fishing, it was just in a little plastic container that I kept in the fridge.
Yeah. Yeah,
so I didn't. Yeah, and if you forget about them, they do start to cocoon and turn into beetles. So I guess I could have started a mealworm farm, but yeah.
Yeah, the thing with the fridge method, I've also used that at one point. I did a mistake by feeding them in the fridge. That is not to do, because then it will mold. But the fridge is often used for mealworms if you want to just have them to not do in this whole pupating and cocooning stage, because they will go into a kind of diapause hibernation, as far as I'm aware. Please correct me if I'm saying something wrong. And that's how you can keep a farm small. But I've always tried to keep a growing farm, even though it's never really done too well. But the way I've done the farms is I've had a small plastic box, cut a big hole in the lid, and then put old oatmeal inside, and then just dropped all the mealworms inside and then fed them a cucumber. And that's worked quite well, because they have grown and they have started to get beetles and all of that. Lynn, do you have any good experiences with mealworms and how you keep them?
Well, I've kept them for a while and they sort of never ran out. I also used to feed those to the rodents, so they were fun to keep. But I'm like, when breeding them, people use like this sort of boxes or crates on top of each other with like mesh. But I'm not very creative with my hands, so I can't make something like that. So I usually breed everything in one box, but then the beetles start eating the pupae and the babies.
Yeah, that's the thing. If you want to do it correctly, you'll have to have three containers. So you have to have a container with the beetles, and the beetles lay eggs, and then you have to put the eggs in a separate container, and the eggs will hatch into the mealworms, and they will then live their life until they pupate, and then you'll have a third container with pupae, as far as I'm aware. And I never did that. I just had one box with everything in. And to be honest, it worked. It worked very well. I think I just over-hunted them. What about you, Ansi? Have you any good experiences with the mealworm farms?
Not yet, no. Although it does seem kind of a really good sort of thing to do, because, yeah, as Lynn said, they never seem to run out. They just... Yeah, there's always more and more and more. And you can buy them in such high numbers for so cheap. They're pretty perfect.
Yeah, that's the thing. And they're also perfect for small colonies, because the worm itself... Now, there's a difference between mealworms and Maori worms / superworms. And as far as I know, it's just the size of them. They're, of course, a different species. But within ankeeping, it's just a bigger mealworm, as far as I'm aware. And they have the same care. Except it's a little bit harder, I think, with the Maori worms. But either way, the good thing about mealworms is, especially if you have a small founding colony, that you can just chop the head off and then just give a little body part into the colony, like with the fruit flies. And that's where I think mealworms really shine. And generally, they're just very cheap and low maintenance. Is there anything you guys want to add on mealworms?
No, I don't have anything.
Wonderful. Well, then I think we should go on to the next kind of breeder insect, which something I have not done a lot of, fruit flies. So have you all three kept fruit flies?
Me never.
I have. Well, yeah. I currently do, yeah.
And Casey, is your farm working with actually breeding them, or is it just keeping them alive farm?
So I bought them as a starter kit, and it says to keep them, like, right on the container, it says to keep them at about 70 Fahrenheit. And, oh, I mean, okay. I have, and they do start to reproduce, and I guess it comes with, the container also came with some food in there for them to sustain themselves, but they're about out, and I'm getting ready to move them over to another container, a better container, I guess. But they're super easy. I've barely even paid attention to them. They're fruit flies, so you just give them fresh fruits and vegetables. But they do get unwieldy very fast because they are so small and fast. And every time I get into them, there's always some escapees.
Yeah, I was about to say that. First of all, 70 Fahrenheit is 21 Celsius. But how do you then feed them without having escapees, or do you just have escapees?
I just have escapees, and then I just find and I whatever's gotten out, if I find them, then they get they also get fed to the ants. But I haven't quite crossed the bridge of feeding them yet, because I don't want to open up the container. But outside of that, they've been super easy to maintain, at least.
So you have a feeder box that you don't want to open to use them as feeders.
Yes, I drilled a hole in the side, and I keep a piece of vinyl tube attached to that, and then I have a separate container that I attach to the vinyl tube, and I dump out a few and go stick the extra container in the freezer for 5 minutes.
Oh, that's actually a smart idea. And I think where fruit flies really shine, the reason I've tried keeping them 3 or 4 times without ever doing any Google or anything, and I've bought them, I've fed them, and they've died out, and I've bought a new pack. I think where they really shine is you can live feed them to most colonies. And like you say, put them in a freezer, then they are cooled down, and then they go into this hibernation, or they diapause, and then the ants can just pick them. I would never recommend live feeding even to a small lazy snatcher colony or whatever, because the fruit flies can cause a lot of stress. But generally, with bigger colonies, you can just put them in the outworld, the workers go over and take it, and they just bite it over and take it home. And I think that's personally where I think fruit flies really shine. What about you, Jake? You've also kept fruit flies?
Yeah, I've done basically the whole breeding of fruit flies as well, which was... It was quite good. I had it going for about 5 months before I kind of let it slip because it got smelly eventually, one of them. But you start with a tub and then you get this weird smelling powder that's kind of smells a bit like cinnamon. And you add like water to it, and then you get the wood and chuck it in, and you put a few flies in and you just leave them for like a couple weeks. And before you know it, you got loads of maggots and flies and everything again.
Yeah, it's really something I want to try it again, because I've never used these kits. Is this how much for such a kit? Is it like an expensive thing or?
No, it was
quite cheap, I think.
It was like $15 US. Maybe.
I think they might have
more. Could be a lot less than that. I'm just guessing, but.
Oh yeah, well, Kushy sells like a starter kit. Right?
I think so, yeah. That's where I got mine from, if he still sells them. But hopefully. It's really cheap as well. If you kind of do it yourself and buy kind of a few months' worth of supplies, it works out super cheap as well.
Yeah, I see. It's currently sold out, but you can buy like a bag of this mixing powder, I'm guessing. Then it says how you use it. Oh, that's cool. Definitely something to try in the future. But would you say you'll use... Have you used them as a feeder also, Jake?
Yeah, I was feeding most of them. Kind of, I get kind of probably about 500 at least kind of out of one tub. So I'd just be chucking them in by the...
So how do you then chuck them in without escapees then?
I just bang the pot a lot. So I'll be there just... Bang, 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 just banging it away, and I'll get a big blob near the opening, and then I'll quickly open it and shut it again and bang the rest off, kind of thing. Lots of banging.
It sounds like a technique you learn slowly. Okay.
They love getting out.
Yeah, and I think the good thing is they're easy to pick up and put in. Are they also flightless fruit flies then?
Yeah, they can't fly, so luckily they run off, but you can kind of splat them if you really, really have to, or
Yeah.
Yes. Pick them up, chuck them in the ants.
I don't know if it's the same everything. I'm guessing it's the same, but at least the flightless one here in Denmark is with their wings are quelled up. So genetically, when they're born, their wings are defect and they won't work. So they'll try to fly, but due to their wing being quelled or turned around, they can't use them. I'm guessing it's the same, but that's how they are flightless flies. But
I haven't looked at mine hard enough to know.
maybe it's because I've had the macro lens on them. That's probably why I can explain in such detail. I don't think it's something I would notice when they run around either. But Jake, do you then? Where do you use the fruit flies compared to all the other feeders like your mealworms?
Well, mostly I'd give a few to the starter colonies, although when you've got a big tub, it will support way more starter colonies than you'll ever have. So I'd kind of just find a colony and be like, oh, you look a bit hungry. So I'd chuck in like a load of fruit flies that were kind of excess.
But yes, yeah, is that just live feed? Colonies. Just live feeding then?
Yeah, kind of fidoles or something. They finish it off fast.
Yeah, that's the thing. I don't feel it's too. The thing I don't like is if you're live feeding something that don't just instantly die. But I feel like the fruit flies, that's a good thing. They just die. but they can still cause a little bit of panic if they get into the nest and fly around in the nest. So that's where troubles can occur. But I don't know if there's anything else to add about fruit flies. Do you guys have anything? Or shall we just move on to the next species?
I thought I did, but I don't.
Alrighty. Well, I think the next one is something I am really curious to hear if you guys have ever succeeded. Because a lot of people, at least Australian people, are using crickets and grasshoppers. And it's something every time I've tried to breed them, I've never bred them successfully. I've always just bred them and no, they've just died out. I've tried feeding them. They've still died out. I can't keep them alive for more than like 2 or 3 weeks. It's the only feeder insects that I've just given up on. I can't keep them alive. Who here have... Yeah, Lynn and Jake, you've kept them, right?
Yeah, in the past I've had some. Although I can't keep them alive either. I end up getting... Every so often I'll buy some for the Harpignathos, kind of, because they like them. But after a few days, yeah, most of them are dead. And
yeah,
they just go downhill so fast.
Yeah, what I like about them is, again, like the mealworms, they're small and it's easy to feed a cricket to like a small colony because there's, yeah, I like mixing it up every once in a while. Have you kept them, Lynn?
Well, I haven't tried breeding them yet, but I do occasionally buy them because often when I buy them from the store, they haven't been eating anything for a while. So if I chuck anything in there, like an apple or something, they start eating like right away. Yeah. And then they are good loaded on good nutrients, so I know my colonies will have a healthy meal. And I love the sounds that all those crickets make. So sometimes I just have a tip in the room that my PC is in just to hear them cricket the whole day.
Hang on, you're buying the big ones then? The big
yeah,
ones.
Sure.
Oh, I always say the tiny one that haven't started making noises yet.
I have huge colonies to feed, so I have to buy the big ones.
that's true. Actually, at one point, one of the things that really failed with my naturalistic tank is I put put crickets in there, and they were just feeding on all the plants, so I had to take them out again. But one of the crickets, I didn't take it down. I didn't see it, so I didn't remove it. And when I had to empty the tank, it was just huge. I got so scared because I thought it was like a giant spider or something running around. Until I realized it was just one of these crickets who had actually hit their adult size. It was insane, the size. But I feel like it's the same for everyone here. Crickets are a little bit hard to breed, at least. But do you guys like it as a feeder, if you don't think of the breeding of it?
I've really only fed crickets to my Pogo Nomermex colony, because it's my biggest colony. But They don't leave any scraps when I feed them crickets. Like I have fed them grasshoppers, and usually they'll eat about 3/4 of a grasshopper and leave a husk or like a leg and stuff like that, but when I feed them crickets, there are absolutely no remnants except for, like, maybe wings if it had them.
Does that mean they don't have an exoskeleton then?
Maybe. I think they do, but it's just soft compared to a grasshopper.
Oh. Anyone who can fact check that, Lynn?
Well, you have the black grasshopper, the black crickets are a little bit harder in the shell. But the brown ones, those are a little bit softer, so you can often squish them. And sometimes the head stays behind, like the eyes. But usually they get just completely eaten.
Ah. I must have overfed in my colonies then. I can't remember quite. I generally just feel like crickets are, at least you often see them in Australia, but I think they just grab them from the outside. That's, of course, also something we're going to talk about later, just grabbing insects from the outside, because that's something many people like to doing, and I'm also doing it myself. Like you, Jake, you just fed them your colony a wild mouse. Can you explain that story?
Oh, yeah, well, my dog managed to catch a mouse, and I thought, oh, yeah, might as well give it to the Carabera diversa and see what happens. And so, yeah, and it went, and away they got. They got to work, and basically, in 2 days, they chomped it all down. It's the first time I've ever fed like an ant to a mouse to an ant colony as well. But it went quite well.
But was it like was it killed? Did your dog kill the mouse?
Oh yeah, the mouse was dead. Right. Yeah, the dog had taken care of that.
All right, and then you just dumped it in.
Yeah, threw it in, and all that's left now is a little skeleton.
Yeah, I really want to try feeding pinkies. So pinkies are baby rats and baby mouses, which you can order, which you can buy frozen and just place in there. That's at least what I've gathered of the stories.
And yeah, I used to feed pinkies to my snake when I had one. I've actually been considering the same thing for my pogos.
Yeah, because the thing is, they are a lot bigger than like a mealworm, so they have a lot more protein in there. But I can't remember who said it, but I think or someone else once told me, it was in a discussion with Hood, because Hood have really often fed the pinkies to his large colonies, which makes sense because it's a lot easier just to give one pinky compared to 10 adult roaches. But as far as I've heard, the roaches has a lot more higher protein. So it's a lot more healthy for the colony to feed roaches due to their protein intake compared to mouses or pinkies. But again, we are hitting a point where I'm not too factual based. I don't know if you guys know anything about the difference.
I have no idea about the nutrition contents of any of these things.
No,
I just know roaches are pretty high up, I think. Yeah, that's all I know.
Well, if I go mixing it, well, with roaches, of course, most of them, if you cut them open, it's liquid inside. But with the pinkies, they are pretty solid. There's only blood in there that's not solid, but that dries out pretty quickly. So the whole pinky is solid, which is harder for the ants to eat and harder too for them to digest.
Oh.
So that makes it a little bit less on protein because they just have to cut it into pieces and take it to the larvae to eat. They cannot drink it up to disperse everywhere.
Is it something you've tried feeding, Lynn?
Yeah.
But do they then start to smell the pinkies?
Well, lucky for me, all my setups are closed, so I have no clue.
What about you, Jake? Did your setup start to smell?
Luckily not, because that was my main concern. That's why I've never fed them one before, because I'm afraid it'll go like all disgusting and smelly and it'll stink the whole room out sort of thing. But luckily, they ate it fast enough and it didn't go smelly.
Yeah, I think you just need to give a pinky to a large colony because, they need to be able to eat it very quickly. But yeah, that's been a little bit about most common animals. We still have roaches, and I think that's pretty much the basic feeders after we've talked about. Oh, yeah, that's something I haven't tried. Can you explain what that is, Lynn?
Well, maggots are baby flies. Well, the babies of flies. Maggots and caterpillars. Yeah, you also have caterpillars as feeders. Some people use caterpillars. But maggots, often people buy them as for the fish, like for fishing. And then they use the maggots for the ants as well, which is also usable. Personally, I've only tried the maggots that I accidentally attracted to my trash bin. The ants were a bit confused by them because those are really insanely juicy. So if they bite in it, juice spatters anywhere, everywhere, and it's like a mess. But they did finish all of it, so that's something.
Were you then live feeding them or just or doing it like mealworms?
Well, I had a few frozen, and if you freeze them, they get like popcorn. No, not really popcorn, but they get like inflated or something, like really big. And I have, for the maculatus, I've chucked a few in there alive for a bit, but the majors just bite once and it's just dead. So yeah. That's how easy it goes.
Yeah, so it's kind of like fruit flies.
Yeah, kind of.
But how big are they then, if you say it's a fly larvae or fly maggot?
Well, the ones that I used were, like, pretty big. They were almost the size to be pupating into flies, so...
All right. Is it... I've heard people have done doing that before. Is that, I guess it's also something you can breed, but I guess you just breed them with the flies, I guess.
It's really nasty to breed them because you need the flies, of course, and then you need to a piece of rotting meat.
Yeah, no, thank you.
Nope, I don't have the stomach for that. I cannot.
No, I've had a big problem with flies in my room, in the ant room, for the longest. I've had like periods where it goes up and down. At the moment, it's actually very clean. Why? I have no idea. I don't know what I'm doing different. But I remember at the Mesa Barber setup, I didn't understand where they were coming from. They kept just being all over the place. And then one day I removed all of the trash. The thing with the Mesa Barbers is they have a trash corner. And then they pull the cotton out of their water tube and the water starts seeping out. And I've never seen it flood, but I can see that the trash pile is getting darker in color. So somehow it's getting wet and I'm guessing it's from the water. And it starts to smell. Either way, I cleaned out, and there were just hundreds of these maggots on the ground. And the ants didn't attack them. I was like, that's free food right here. But they were just crawling out. The worst thing is they were actually destroying the escape barrier because they could just climb through it. But they left a sticky residue or something, so the ants could also climb through the barrier. So, yeah, not something I can recommend. But lastly, the big feeder animal, at least as far as I know and as far as I've tested, is cockroaches. And there's like the two big ones you can use. You can use dubia roaches or red one runners. Now, I'm just going to ask, have any of you used red runners?
Red runners are native to Utah, actually. I did grab a few last time I went camping in Moab. I grabbed like 9 or 10 and brought them home and fed them to all my ants. They work great. I haven't tried feeding dubia roaches yet because mine aren't. I've decided that my dubia roaches aren't big enough to feed to my colonies yet. And so yeah. I actually have them in the same style container you did your mealworm set up with, a plastic container with oatmeal and carrots, and I'm just waiting for them to grow.
Yeah, I think roaches, that's where I can really talk, because I've had so much different things to test. But I wanna let one of you start. So Jake or Lynn, can you explain how you keep your roaches? Well, let's just say to Jake.
Yeah. Well, I keep mine in a little tub and have my egg boxes, a few of those on their side. Not really much happens, so I just keep them in the box. I don't heat them, and I think it's making them go a bit slow. But yeah, I just put in a little protein jelly every so often, and they eat that, and that's all I really do to them.
How? I don't understand, Jake. You have so many colonies. Where's all the food coming from? If you have like a how big is this container? Is it like 1,000 roaches or 15?
Oh no, probably got maybe 20 adult females at the moment, but it's not really fully going yet.
But where's all your food coming from?
Every so often I'll buy like hundreds off the internet, so I'll buy like 500 large cockroaches, and that'll last me a little bit.
Damn, Jake. Yeah, all right. What about you, Lynn?
I have red runner roaches, dubia roaches, and hissing cockroaches. And I do have these giant bins that they're inside, because the red runners and dubias actually don't escape the bins, but hisser roaches can climb out of it, so that's a bit of a thing. And the red runners actually need heating in order for them to breed and develop, so that's a bit of an issue in my current setup, because I need to move them upstairs in the end room for them to heat, but I don't have the space at the moment, so I still need to make sure that happens sometime. But the dubias, they just breed like crazy, and I thought I had like 200 or something, but I think I have more like 800 or something. And now the hissers has also started breeding, and now I have all these babies upside down on the lid because they just climb upstairs and climb out.
So you also use the hissing roaches as an food?
Well, they're more of my pets, because hissing roaches get the same size as your hand.
That's
so,
also what I had understood.
Yeah, I love them a lot. Like, especially the alpha male that I have. I just call it the alpha male because he's giant, and I could never feed him because I would cry probably. But the babies, if they're really annoying, then sometimes they get sacrificed.
All right, don't annoy Lynn as a cockroach. Understood. Well, why do we have both the dubias and the red runners?
Why do I? Well, dubias are bigger than red runners, so instead of using like 3 red runner adults for the maculatus, I can just use like 1 dubia. Well, actually, the maculatus needs more than that, but like figure of speech.
Yeah, that makes sense. So why do you keep red runners then?
Because not all of my colonies are the same size as the maculatus.
No, yeah, all right. I see. All right, so I've actually looked forward to this episode for quite some time, just so I can share my dubia knowledge, just because I've spent a lot of money on roaches, and I've thrown a lot of money out the window on roaches. So I initially got this, initially they were in an aquarium, but now they're just in a plastic box, like I think it's 1 meter by 60 centimeters or something, so it's a giant box. And what I do is I have, I think, 10 not-cut egg trays in there. So it's like a big egg tray, massive egg trays. And they're in there. And I have tried so many different things. I've tried with dirt, with natural setups, half-half. And at first I understood that they needed heat and they needed humidity to do well, because the larvae or the eggs of the roaches would die out or dry out if there wasn't enough humidity. So I decided to hydrate the setup, keep it nice and humid. And what then happened was that all the roaches died. I bought like 2 kilos of roaches and they were all dead within 3 months or something. And that's apparently because roaches have a very easy tendency to die due to bacteria infestations and fungus. And it's not something we can see, but it's something that can be within the roaches and the setup. And that's kind of something that can kill them. Either way, I decided to say, all right, I can't afford to buy these roaches all the time, so I need a farm that works. So I went to another guy who said the exact opposite. No humidity, as little humidity as possible. And then you need to have a food bowl and a water bowl. But due to the roaches drowning in the water, you'll have to use cotton. But due to cotton going moldy, you can use these tiny water crystals. And if you put water on the water crystals, it'll become these big water bubbles. So what I then did was I bought, I think it was 3 kilos of roaches, a very expensive purchase, like, I don't know, 800 pounds or something, very expensive. So I bought the tiny ones, I bought the adult ones, and I bought medium-sized ones to just keep, hopefully, if one of the generation fail, I would have a lot of roaches, and just dumped everything in there. And what I've done ever since is absolute nothing. I haven't cleaned them out once because I want to check out low maintenance setups. But the only thing I do is I give them rabbit food and I give them these water crystals. And the reason I've decided to go with rabbit food and not something like dog food is initially I used cat food, but the YouTube video I saw, they said it's not good to use cat food or dog food because it has a high protein. It has a lot of protein, which the roaches will then have. And for if you're feeding it to your, what are they called? Other different exotic animals, many of them can actually get too much protein, which is bad for them. So that's why I decided to, or that's why I follow his recommendation of using rabbit food. So I have a little plastic box within the giant plastic box where I've scratched the sides so the roaches can get in and out because they can climb on the scratches. And I just fill the box with the rabbit food. And I have the same small box with these water crystals, which I have to fill up every week or so. And there haven't come any mold. And I also put a little bit of rabbit food all over the entire setup because the baby roaches like to go under the dirt and hide from the adult roaches because the adult roaches will hunt the babies, as far as I know. But that's why they need somewhere to hide. So if they just have a little bit of rabbit food as substrate in the bottom, then they can go down and hide there. And all of this is something I haven't shared with anyone because I didn't know it was just like the other story where I had a lot of humidity and everyone died. But this farm is doing so well now. And it's, I finally can say that I'm only taking the males just because there's too many males. So of course, also in roach farms, you want a 1-to-5 scale. So 1 male per 5 female. And a male roach is the big one with with a long wing. And the females are just with very tiny wings. And that right there is my roach rant over.
I need to fact check myself. The Red Runners are not native to Utah, but either found a visually similar species, or they're invasive here. I'm not sure. But just to fact check myself, Red Runners are not native to where I live, but they might be here.
I appreciate you doing that, Jay. Always nice with some proper facts. And I can also add that I also heat one side of the container, of my container. I forgot to say that. My ant room is 24 degrees, and I'm heating one side even more. And I can see that most of the roaches, they don't go directly on the heat, but they go towards the heat. And that's also because the nymphs, the roach babies, the nymphs, they will have a way shorter growing up time. So they will go, I think it takes 8 months or something for a roach to grow. And if you heat them a lot, it'll only take like 5.5 to 6 months. So that way you can maximize a lot of growth. But that's also why a roach farm will take a long time to start. And also why I bought 3 kilos of roaches to just give myself a head start. With that, that is my rant over. Any comments on that? Good.
Yeah, it's a good little guide, I'd say that. Hopefully, if I did some of that, I could save myself some pennies.
Yeah, but that's the thing. I mean, I've bought, I think, 10 kilos in total. I bought 2 kilos. It worked like I had them for like 8 months or something. And then I had over 100 the females. Also, you need to always just try to not take the females. Take the babies, take the big babies, take the males. Don't take the females, because if you take the females, the colony will die slowly. And I've always been bad at doing that just because I want the big, juicy ones. But as I finally had a setup that actually worked, now I have a lot of the not adult ones, but big nymphs. I think it's my fourth or fifth try with different techniques before I finally have something that works. So that's why I've been able to share it now, because I trust the setup, and I did not trust the other setups. But yeah, Mr. Matter, Jake, you also said something you would like to mention in this podcast.
Protein jellies.
Exactly.
Yeah, like protein jellies. They don't have have any protein in them, maybe like 3% maximum, but therefore feed into your protein sources though, like your insects.
And why
roaches and things like that.
Yeah, I think Ants Canada, he had a Campanotus, he sold Campanotus where I put them all to war together, and he kept feeding them protein jelly. And I kept thinking, is there really enough protein in the jelly? Because as far as I know, there isn't a lot.
Although it depends what species of the Campanotus, because some of them, they can literally live off basically sugar and a little bit of urea, and then they can do some magic with the urea and make protein out of the sugar, like with their gut bacteria.
Yeah.
But not a lot of them can do it, I don't think. But yeah, some of them can.
That's...
Although I wouldn't recommend feeding your colony just protein jelly, and especially as a protein source, because yeah, it don't work.
No, and to be does your colony take any jellies when you feed them generally?
The Tetramorium bicarinatum do, and the Polyrhachis dives partially do. They'll slowly one, but it takes them forever. They never finish them. However, most of the other colonies like don't really touch them too much.
No, because that's also the same I've experienced. I feel like every time it's only my Metabarbarus that can actually finish one of those. All the other colonies, it just starts to mold after 4 days or something, and I then take it out.
And dries up, shrinks.
Yeah, I don't know. They always go moldy. For me, I don't know if it's too humid in the setups, even though there isn't any humidity. But I've always had mold problems whenever I do protein jellies. Maybe the Danish ones aren't as good, because whenever I see Ryan, when he feeds protein jelly in his videos, they always look... Well, I guess maybe they're just being emptied before they actually start to mold. Is that something you've experience with, Lynn?
Well, my jellies get usually finished within a day or two.
Damn.
And protein jellies are usually called beetle jellies, and they are made of agar-agar, which is an algae. And for 100 grams agar-agar, you actually have 35 grams of sugar, but also 43 grams of protein.
Oh.
So they do contain protein, but not in high enough amounts that the ants can actually use it as a protein replacement for their larvae.
Yeah, so
they really just have like gelatin in it, I think, instead.
No, it's the agar-agar is a gelatin type.
I love the name agar-agar.
Yeah, I don't know how to pronounce it, so I just say agar-agar. Or agar-agar or something. I don't know.
I think it's
agar. Agar, whatever.
I think agar-agar sounds way cooler. It sounds like a Star Wars character.
Oh, no.
Oh, yeah. Well, I'm saying that as a guy who only watched, I think I've watched one Star Wars movie, so. But yeah, as per usual, we have, of course, also asked you guys, the viewers, for your opinions. And we asked, what is the best feeder to keep, buy, and breed? And 43% of you said roaches, 16% said crickets, 16% said crickets. It's definitely not the breed part, I guess. It must be the buy and keep part. 26% says mealworms, 12% said fruit flies, and the rest says none of the above. I think Gecko Ants has a reasonable problem. He says he's not allowed to keep roaches, and I think it is a very reasonable... a lot of parents don't allow roaches, and I also remember... My girlfriend was not very happy when I kept my first roaches. Do you guys have any advice? Lynn, you said you had... Well, you have roaches that can escape and the roaches that can't escape. Why can't the other escape?
Well, they can't climb the tub. They can't climb on plastic.
Exactly.
Or glass.
Exactly. Just what I wanted to hear. And I think it's also... A lot of people, I don't know when the roaches actually fly. I'm guessing when it's some mating. I don't know if you guys know when roaches actually fly. But the only time I see any of my roaches use their wings is when they try to escape and they fall and they like have to flap them out to turn around. But none of my roaches, at least the dubious, none of them actually do anything with their wings.
Dubias and red runners cannot fly. They can only glide if you yeet them against the wall. If you throw some through the room, or if they fall off a high wall, they use their wings to glide, but they can't fly upwards.
Is this something you've tested, Lynn?
Maybe.
So that was were they one of the roaches who were.
No, the hissers don't have wings, so that's a glad thing. But Noat, one of the Red Runners escaped and he fell down the stairs, so he used his wings.
All right. Oh, yeah. But I mean, it's also the thing with roaches. I'm really scared to lose mine. I remember I lost one roach and it just disappeared. And I mentally died. I looked for that one roach for like 2 hours and it was just gone. Yeah, it was just gone. I don't understand how it disappeared. And what's even weirder is, I think it was a medium-sized roach, not adult or anything, so it wouldn't be bad if it escaped, because it couldn't... Well, it could mate if another one had escaped, but it could not breed with itself. And then a few weeks later, the vacuum cleaner in the other room have caught it. My robot vacuum cleaner. Don't know how it came in there, but I think that's the thing with that's really scary about roaches is... Well, they have a myth of being quite good at adapting to humans.
Yeah, I only have 4 roaches, and nobody I live with is happy that I have them.
No, I think. But you had dubious now, right?
Yeah, they were. I went to a reptile show, and they were given to me for free, with like a little coupon. And I was like, yeah, cool, free roaches.
Yeah, that's kind of them. I think that's a problem with the reason I have a roach farm and not just buy the roaches is they're so expensive, the dubias, at least in Denmark. They are, I don't know, if I want to buy a box of mealworms, it costs, a small box costs 25 Danish kroner. And if I want to buy the same box of roaches, I get 2 adult roaches for the same price, or maybe 12 small ones. I don't know if the prices are the same where you are, but it's just expensive to go with the dubias compared to mealworms.
So have you guys, this is a little bit off, well, it's on topic, but it's off topic for what we're talking about right now. But what kind of food scraps do you feed your bugs? Do you go out of your way to make sure like you don't feed them anything extra greasy? Like I'll give my aunts chicken, but like I always make sure it's like not seasoned, or if it is seasoned, I run it underwater first. But just, and that's usually just to like get by if my aunts look hungry and I don't have any food readily available. It's been a while since that's happened, but just out of curiosity.
Anyone want to take it before me? No. Yeah. All right. The thing I need to say, of course, Lynn and Antimatters are new here, so we're slowly. The thing with the old team is we started to know each other because hang on, we've done 14 episodes. This is no 13 episode. Us four, or the old crew hosts. So yeah, we do need a few episodes to kind of adapt to each other. So that's why we have these sometimes a little bit weird spaces in between. But yeah, Jake, what did you want to say?
Basically, all I feed my roaches is the little protein jellies, and that's about it, to be honest. Maybe the odd bit of carrot, but only like once a month.
What about you, Lynn?
I kind of go out of my way to buy, because we have that over here, cockroach chow, specially made for cockroaches for my roaches, which is, I think... from like the pellets for little chicks, baby chickens, which are grinded up into powder, and then that's edible for the roaches. And I also buy high quality, usually apples or carrots or stuff like that to feed to my roaches, because everything that my ants eat is what my roaches eat. So I make sure that everything is of good quality before I feed it to the roaches. And the protein jellies or beetle jellies, they also love that.
See, this is why you're evil, then, because now you make me feel bad. No, the thing is, I kind of was like that for many years until I started keeping roaches. Again, because they are expensive when you fail a setup. So when your apple starts to rot or something and it starts to give problems, you have to take it out. And I remember for the longest time I fed them orange and apples every day, and I had to take it out before it started going bad. And then sometimes the juices fell down and a lot of different problems. So that's why now, today, I only just feed the rabbit food for my roaches, and that's the only thing they get. And I don't know, my ants have done very well the past year with only that food. Saying that they do not get all the good apple juices and all of that. I give them the occasional jelly here and there, but generally, I'm not too good at that point. I am very low maintenance. Here's some rabbit food. Let's go.
Oh, I kind of meant like, do you give table scraps to your ants? Because I've given my ants like pieces of steak or like small pieces of chicken. But yeah, I those answers work too. You guys all feed your ants proper food.
Yeah, well, I mean, I've tried the occasional time I flip in a pepperoni from when I make pizza or something. But the thing with human food is just it goes bad so fast, as far as what I've tried. Where a roach dries up within a few days and just doesn't go bad. Human food that is meant to be refrigerated goes bad really quickly.
If I feed them like meat, like steak or chicken, I usually only do steak or chicken, and I try to rinse it underwater so it's not all greasy or full of seasoning. But
yeah, I don't know if it's it makes a difference for the ants. It's a good question, actually. Maybe some of the listeners can pop a message to the ant pod and say their opinion. I don't know, actually. It's a good question. I feel like it may affect them, especially if they get something like chili or something, but then maybe they would just avoid it altogether.
I know they don't like pepper. They do not like black pepper.
No, that's true. That's one of the things you can put in the windows to keep them out, I think. Maybe not. What were you saying, Jake?
Maybe salt. I don't know. I just stay away from salt when I give them kind of chicken or steak. So like wash it off kind of thing.
I mean, I remember with my first Lacious Niger Colony back in 2018, I used to buy these cheap chickens on a stick like these. It's like just snack, and I started just putting it into the ants, and they had some kind of seasoning, and the ants loved them. That was the only thing they wanted to eat. But that was back when I felt like I don't want to kill any eater insects, so I wanted to go with a protein away from human departments, and that's why I chose that decision. And they loved it, and I never did anything to clean it. But when I just but this was something pre-cooked, so it was pre-cooked chicken with different things. And when I just tried to add normal chicken, raw chicken, it went bad within only a few hours. It was disgusting. So I only used that pre-cooked chicken, and the colony actually thrived off it. Although it was very small pieces I fed, and I took it out the day after, I think. I think the last big thing... did that answer your question, Casey?
Absolutely. That was awesome. Thank you.
Wonderful. The last big thing we haven't talked about today is wild. Let's just go through the comments. Farm Tech says, I have all four that you listed here for my ants, which were roaches, crickets, mealworms, and fruit flies. We have, Pufferfish Jimmy says, small colony of fruit flies. We have, this is the comment I want to read. I'm going to skip to the next one, saying from Mega something says, mealworms are easy, but they are not very nutritious. Fruit flies are, but let some escape. I'd in the end go for crickets. Actually, let's just go and read that comment. What do you guys think of that? Are mealworms nutritious or not?
Well, mealworms are very high in fats, which the ants cannot really use, except for maybe harvesting ants like Mesobarbarus, but or yeah, stuff like that. But they are indeed higher in fat than in protein when you compare it to like roaches or crickets.
So would you then feed them more to give the same protein, or do you, are you saying that it's generally not the best option?
Well, if you put it on a scale, like compared to the others, the mealworms are actually not that high up.
No. But yeah, to be honest, the reason I've gone away from mealworms is just there's too little. I needed to cut like 15 worms to satisfy one colony. That's why I decided to go with roaches, because they were bigger, meaning I only had to feed a medium-sized roach to give the same amount almost. Just definitely something to think about if you have a large colony. I think for small colonies, he also says that fruit flies are, but they can escape. I guess it's something. I mean, I've never had any bad experiences with mealworms to small colonies, but it's definitely something to think about if you want to give the completely optimal conditions. With that, unless there's anyone who wants to comment more on that, saying that,
nope.
Perfect. Thank you for responding, Jake. with that, we'll go to the final comment saying, that is one name, Histro? Sorry for the mispronunciation. I have a house and I just look around the garden for insects. And that is, of course, the big thing that a lot of ankeepers says, no, 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 never do that. And a lot of ankeepers says, we don't care. And some say boil them, some say freeze them. Just to drop the microphone to Jake, what do you think about just grabbing insects from the wild? I mean, you just took a mouse and fed it.
Yeah, well, as long as it was kind of a... Oh, it sounds really bad, but alive when you got it, I guess that's a good place to start, because you know then it hasn't died from something bad, if you get what I mean. Because you see people and they're like, can I feed this dead insect? And it's like, that's a bit risky if you ask me, because you don't know how it died, you don't know what... It kind of could have been pesticides, but if it's still alive, it's normally a good sign that it's all right. But you just got to worry about the mites. But,
yeah.
So, yeah, really, just the mites. That's the issue I'd have.
Can you explain the mites, Lynn?
Well, mites are on. You can never know if a wild insect is mite free or parasite free or bacteria free compared to what you breed yourself or buy in the store.
Exactly. And all right. Can we just make the perfect loop? And Casey, what can you do to then avoid the mites if you want to feed the insects still?
What I do is if I do catch a wild insect and I double check with my parents, because that's who I still live with, but I double check with them to make sure that we don't have any pesticide people coming or spraying anytime. Like I used to do that for a job, so I know that if you come and spray pesticides, it only lasts about a month or so, or at least for the company I worked with. But when I catch wild bugs, I usually either boil them to kill them or freeze them, and then just I look at my bugs hard before I feed them to my ants to make sure there are no extra bugs on my bugs. But yeah, just make sure they're clean, make sure they're dead. That's mostly what I do.
Casey, you completed the loop. You actually said what I wanted you to say. Perfect. So yeah, to sum it up, if you take insects from the wild, the dangerous thing is that there can be parasites, mites, different things that you can't bring into the colony. But if you want to be on the safe side, you can boil or freeze them to make sure that the mites or whatever can die. Actually, also very good point, Jake, with saying that you have to take them alive. It's actually, to be honest, it's not something I've gone to do, to take dead things, but it's a good thing to have for people who go out and just take whatever they can find. Also, because if a spider have been dead there for 5 weeks or 2 years, I don't think there's much nutrition remaining in it. It may just be the exoskeleton laying. But yeah, to take a...
mites.
Say again?
Like an exoskeleton filled with mites.
In the worst condition. No food, just mites. All right. So let's just take a round. Jake, feeding wild insects. No go or go?
Oh, no go. I'd say, to be honest, yeah.
You'd recommend to go for the feeders?
Yeah, I'd say it's better that kind of keep it all domestic or whatever they call it.
All right, Lynn, no go or go?
No go.
All right, easy and just solid. All right, Casey, no go or go?
I do it personally, but I would not recommend it to a newbie.
All right, and I was gonna say go, but then you all said kind of no. I have a lot of people on TikTok saying, "Oh, it's my first colony. What should I feed them? Can I just feed a spider?" And I just said boil them. But I think I recommend them to go for the mealworm farm. But I get that some people just would rather not. But yeah, I think that's been a quite good look around of everything within the feeder part of the hobby. Antimatter. So sum it up. What would you recommend and why?
Definitely get your own roach like farm as well, or whatever they're called, like breeder setup, because then you'll have a mix of the sizes and you'll be sorted. Yeah, that's my recommendation.
That was exactly what I was going to say. Either way, Lynn, what is your go-to? What is your overall recommendation?
Also, the roaches, if you can or are allowed to by your parents, if you're not allowed to have roaches, ask them if you can put them in the freezer instead, or just use crickets if you can.
Just a pop-in question. Can you freeze something forever? If a roach has been frozen 2 years ago, would you still feed it?
No. Not for 2 years, but like for several months. If it's a small airtight tub, it can go for a while.
All right, so like half a year?
Yeah, probably. I think so.
All right. It's good to have, because else people will just sat there be thinking, how long? All right, Casey, your overall recommendation with also what you currently do yourself.
So because I am new to breeders, the fruit flies have been insanely easy to keep and breed, but you do have to get a little tricky if you don't want escapees.
Yeah, I must say, it was a smart system with having a cup in another cup.
I was buying like 5 crickets at a time, so each of my colonies would get one full cricket.
Yeah.
Or they get bugs from outside, but make sure when you find the bug, it's alive. Kill it. Make sure it's clean before you feed it to your ants.
Wonderful. And I think we're going to... Normally at this point we would have ant news, but as of the last few weeks, unless someone has something they want to say here at ant news, is there anyone who want to say anything?
I might have a thing.
All right, then we'll bring back ant news, because there was a few episodes where it was just a little bit of quietness. All right, Lynn, what is your ant news of the week?
You can boost Mesorcephalodus with Mesorbarbarus brood.
Very clever.
That is a good way of ensuring a very expensive queen has a better survival rate, I'm guessing.
Well, that's still what I'm trying to find out, but I do know that she will accept the broods, care for the broods, and the workers won't kill the queen. But if I just need to find out if the Barbarous workers will care for the Cephalotus brood. So until next time, I guess, for the update.
So it's a live testing, I can hear. Live experimenting. that's good. Then people can follow along on the podcast. then we'll have the this week's Lynn test experiment. All right. Jake or Casey, do you have any ant news?
I do not this week.
That is totally understandable. Jake?
I do not really, Ivan. It's all quiet at my front.
Yeah, it's that was also the train I was following, just slow and steady, making my mite video without with no apparent reason. I just had a TikTok go completely insane and explode completely. So that made my weekend very, very happy. Normally I don't go too much into the statistics, but goddamn, when a video goes viral, it hits my heart and it hits my mood a lot. I was one happy man. For those who don't know, I had a video go viral. It hit, at the time of recording, it hit 4.2 million views. The problem with TikTok is it mostly exposes to your own country. So I had a lot of, in all my English videos, I had a lot of people saying, "I smell Danish, I smell Danish, just talk Danish, I know you're Dane, why can't you?" All of this. But with this viral video, it finally came outside of Denmark and actually went viral. So that's very many months of work to actually get a video go outside Denmark. So that's very happy man, very happy man. But yeah, guys, it's actually been a very good episode. It's been nice just to sit down and chat. The thing with the interviews is, of course, when we have four people and it was just one interview, we are focusing on the interview and we just sat there, all of us just listening, which I do enjoy. But I also do enjoy a good casual chat. With that being said, that has been it for this. I was about to say this week's video, my YouTube outro. But that has been it for this podcast. If you like this podcast, be sure to share it with all of your Ankeeping friends and family. And I still think I stole that quote completely from Formicast. I'm not too sure. Either way, you will hear more from us at the end part next week.